Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. This is the Fisheries Podcast, a show that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fishery science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Fisheries Pod. And if you're the generous sort, you can support the podcast on Patreon as well. And through Patreon, you're able to support the show with either a recurring or one-time donation, which of course helps us pay for various parts of the show. And if that's not your thing, you can also purchase Fisheries Pod t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, and face masks on our Teespring store. So be sure and check that out as well. I'm your host, Dawson Hicks, joined by my co-host, not Jacob Atchley this time. If you guys are regular listeners of the podcast, you may know that I usually do these alongside my fellow Arkansas Tech student, Jacob Atchley, but unfortunately he couldn't be here today. So instead, we have recruited Arkansas Tech Fisheries and Wildlife graduate student, Anthony Zenga, who you may remember if you're a regular listener of the podcast, because we did an interview with Anthony Zenga here a while back. It's a really good episode. You should check it out. But in the meantime, our guest for today is Kyler Hecke. Kyler is originally from Hot Springs, Arkansas, where he grew up with a passion for all things nature. He attended the University of Arkansas at Little Rock for his bachelor's degree, where he received a degree in biology with a concentration in ecology and organismal biology. After that, Kyler attended the University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff for his master's, where he got his degree in aquaculture and fisheries with a concentration in fish ecology and management. He then attended the University of Tennessee, Knoxville for his doctorate degree, where he got his degree in natural resources with a concentration on fish ecology and management. Kyler is currently a visiting professor of fisheries science at Arkansas Tech University. His current research interests are in stream fish ecology and management, specifically with species of conservation need. So with that being said, welcome to the podcast, Kyler.
Thanks, Dawson. It's good to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So like most people in our field, you probably grew up with an interest in the outdoors and most things nature. Is that accurate?
Yeah, you know, when I was growing up, I spent a lot of my time outside. And, you know, when it came time for me to decide to go to college, I figured if I'm going to go to college, it better be in regards to something outside. So all I knew at that point was that I wanted to be a biologist, because I figured that would let me go and spend time outside while working.
Awesome. So have you always been interested in fish specifically? I know you're from Hot Springs, and around there you have like Lake Hamilton and DeGray and Ouachita. So did that proximity to the water early on have a big influence on your interest in fish and fisheries management? Or was that some kind of a thing that you gained an interest in over time?
Yeah. So originally growing up, I was interested in wildlife because going outside, spending time outside, that's most of what I got to observe in my early childhood. It wasn't until I got to undergrad when I first took, you know, an ichthyology class, a fisheries management class, where I got exposed to, you know, this underwater world of fish. And I got exposed to darters, and that really just blew my mind of how colorful the males of darters are. And I'm like, I never knew, because, you know, growing up, probably most people in the South anyway were just told these are just minnows and shiners. I had no idea about darters at that point. So when I first got exposed to them, I just developed a very strong passion for fish in general.
Yeah, that's kind of the same with me. I didn't know what a darter was until Charlie Gagan taught me about it in ichthyology. And really, up until that point, like, I'd seen them before, but everyone I was around always just called them suckers or minnows or something like that. But I had never really known. I really didn't know that they had colors like that until I took ichthyology and I found out about, like, the orange throat darter and the redfin darter, and they're really pretty colors.
Yeah, definitely. Really pretty fish.
Yeah, and you did some of your graduate research on darters, right?
Yeah, so I did my master's on the strawberry darter, which is a species that is endemic to Arkansas. It is only found in the Strawberry River in north central Arkansas. And when I did my research, you know, it had been roughly 20 years since that species had been assessed distribution-wise. So Dr. Steve Lockman, my master's advisor, got funding to do this project through a state wildlife grant. And we decided we wanted to do occupancy modeling. So we sampled roughly 64 sites and did 4 surveys of every site to try to determine where this species occurred. And based off the data we collected, and we did some analyses of historical occurrence data for the species, we found that the occupancy of this species had actually declined. Now, we didn't necessarily determine what had caused the decline. You know, we kind of set up some new research questions that could hopefully be asked in the future, but we did provide support. This species is on the decline and should be paid attention to when you know, determining what, you know, non-game species need some conservation measures in order to preserve them for the future.
Interesting. And I looked into the strawberry darter a little bit before coming on, and I noticed they really reminded me a lot of the variety of orange throat darters that we have around here, and has those really brilliant oranges and blues like that. But then I realized whenever I looked into it that the strawberry darter is actually, I guess, part of the orange throat complex, which seems to have grown quite a bit in the number of species considerably in the past several years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It seems to be that there's a new species split off, if not every year, every other year. But with the advance in technology of how we, you know, identify and can genetically identify fish, we're capable now of actually splitting fish up, because historically when we ID a fish or describe the fish, looks alike, must be alike. But with the progression of technology and further skills we as biologists and scientists have developed, we now can make better, more informed decisions on what species should actually be split or lumped, for example.
And if any of you guys listening at home are really interested in fish taxonomy and stuff like that, the orange throat darter is definitely worth looking into, because it does have a pretty rich taxonomic history, especially in the past few years. So that's what you did for your master's. And I guess you really developed a passion for darters after that, because you went to pursue a PhD at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, where you studied more darters over there, specifically sickle darters. Is that right?
Yeah. So, you know, during my master's, at that point, I knew I just wanted to be a biologist when I started. So by the time I finished, you know, I really fell in love with research. And so I told myself, convinced myself, probably more like it, that going to get a PhD was the route I needed to take. And so I lucked out, and Dr. Brian Alford, who was my PhD advisor, got funding, state wildlife grant funding once again, to assess the distribution of the sickle darter, which is a species that is endemic to the Upper Tennessee River Basin. So it can be found in East Tennessee, Western North Carolina, and Southwestern Virginia. And so originally we just wanted to do the distribution of that species, but we ended up actually determining or building an ecological niche model for the species, which can be utilized in future management of the sickle darter to determine, you know, where some new populations might be, also where some conservation measures might need to be, you know, concentrated within the Upper Tennessee River Basin. And further, we got some other funding from the University of Tennessee Graduate School to determine the movement of this species. Granted, this wasn't on a large scale, it was on a small scale, specifically in the Emory River subbasin, which is a trib of the Clinch River. And so we pit tagged 8 individual sickle darters, and I tracked their movement for around 6 months and determined what specific microhabitats they went to, and if on a temporal scale, if they changed microhabitat. And what we found is they don't necessarily change microhabitat, and that movement appears to be related to changes in hydrology or flow. And based off that data we collected, we were able to determine the home range of these darters. And we actually found that the home range of the sickle darter is relatively small, but very comparable to other small-bodied fish, such as the banded sculpin, when comparing it to a larger bodied fish like largemouth bass. Of course, largemouth bass have a higher or larger home range. So that was very interesting, and I really enjoyed being able to do that work. We also were able to do some spatial analysis on microhabitat selection, as well as diet or prey selection for that species. We're still working on that and getting our data together for that.
That's really interesting. It sounds like you guys have done a fairly in-depth study on the species. Now, the sickle darter, it's in a different genus than the strawberry darter, right?
Yeah. So yeah, the strawberry is an Ethiostoma, or is in the Ethiostoma genus, whereas the sickle darter is in the Procyna genus. So when comparing the two darters, sickle darters are, on darter scale anyway, a lot larger than your Ethiostoma species. So I think the biggest strawberry darter we ever got was maybe 2 3/4 inches, maybe pushing 3, whereas the largest sickle darter we got was a little over 4 inches, pushing 4.5 inches.
So as we said before, Kyler, you're from Hot Springs, and you've gotten quite a bit of your education here in Arkansas, and here you find yourself again as assistant professor of fishery sciences here at Arkansas Tech. So would you say that something about the state kind of keeps in your interest and draws you back?
Yeah, so don't get me wrong. I was more than pleased of being able to move to Tennessee for my PhD and get the plethora of experiences I did out there. However, because I'm here and Arkansas does have a fairly high aquatic diversity in fish, mussels, and crayfish, and I always wanted to come back because I felt like I could come back and do some really good research eventually that could help, you know, preserve or add further knowledge to some of these species to ensure they get the management actions where they're preserved for, you know, future generations to enjoy.
So some of your current research interests, you said, lie with species of greater conservation need. Are there any specific species you're particularly interested in, and what about them are you looking to explore?
Yeah, so I know I said fish in my bio. I should have elaborated and said just aquatic species. So ultimately, I would love to start doing some mussel research here in Arkansas, not a specific species, but try to address some of the, you know, data gaps we have on mussels here in Arkansas and as far as other fish species of greatest conservation need. In Tennessee, I got quite a bit of experience with some lake sturgeon projects, and lake sturgeon do occur in Arkansas. However, Arkansas is on the very extent of the lake sturgeon's range. And I think it would be very interesting to start a lake sturgeon research program, if not research, at least a monitoring program, so we can assess, you know, potentially the changes in this species population and kind of how do they utilize the habitats within Arkansas.
Oh, cool. Then lastly here, I got one more for you. I know when I first got to meet you, we talked a bit about the importance of education in this field. So I was wondering then, as an assistant professor of fishery science, talk about kind of what drew you towards educating, and I guess maybe its importance in the field, whether that be in academia, out in the field, or just recreationalists that want to understand more about what they're kind of immersed in.
Yeah, so I'll start with the academia side of things first. So prior to my PhD, I had very little teaching experience. And once I got to my PhD at UT, I had the opportunity to get quite a bit of teaching experience, both as a teaching assistant and as a primary instructor of a course. And during that time, I really fell in love with teaching because I lucked out, was able to teach some of these upper level fisheries courses such as fishery science and fish ecology and management, and being able to kind of, you know, share the knowledge I have with, you know, undergraduate students. I really found that fascinating that, you know, I guess I'm kind of at that level now where I might know enough, not a whole lot, but at least enough about fisheries where I can share, you know, what I know and help educate them about fisheries as well, especially if it is an individual or a student who is interested in fisheries. So maybe that they can learn something from me and move on and be a great fishery scientist in the future. And then bringing that back here to Tech, so I decided I wanted to teach, and that's why I wanted to go into academia. And so at Tech, currently I'm this semester not teaching any explicit fish classes. I'm teaching intro to biology and environmental science. However, whenever I get a chance, I do bring up fisheries in most of the examples within my environmental science class. So my students in environmental science think I am just a fish nerd, which, you know, I am. But I get them to think when I give them the fisheries example. I might think about your backyard in regards to, let's say, pollution runoff in a stream and how it might affect some of the aquatic organisms that live there. And when I get them thinking in that sense, it kind of brings it full circle. And they understand now because they were given an example that they can relate to, right? So now going towards, you know, the out in the field part of maybe educating or interacting with, you know, your recreational anglers. So I've always enjoyed talking to people I get to meet when I'm out sampling or just when I'm out fishing. I love just chatting with people about fish. You know, what have you caught? Or they might have specific questions when you're out sampling, like, oh, what are you looking for? And you might have the opportunity while you're sampling. I've had the opportunity a few times to, you know, show them a picture of the specific species you're looking for. And, you know, not all the time are they going to actually learn, you know, oh, we call that a minnow or whatnot. But sometimes it does stick. And if it does stick, they'll remember that forever. And that's what's really great. And if they ever get a chance to see that in the future, or they talk to some of their friends, they can say, hey, we have this really unique species that potentially only lives, you know, in the watershed that we live in. And to me, that's really neat. And that's what I get. That's why I enjoy getting to speak, you know, with your user groups, such as your anglers, also, you know, your homeowners that have property on, you know, a said aquatic body, on a said water body, whether that be a river or a lake.
I definitely say that the communication aspect of this field is definitely something that's overlooked, or maybe some people even dread. I mean, I know everyone would love to just be a field rat and stick themselves and look at all this cool stuff. But it's definitely a cool experience then, like you said, when you can communicate what you know and what you're passionate about to students, or share what you're doing with the public and see that they have a genuine interest, at least to ask about what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. And see, back to academia once again, my students, they see how passionate I am about fisheries, or when I'm teaching for that matter, and it makes them more interested in what I'm trying to teach them information wise, because they see, if they see I am passionate about it, you know, they'll be more willing to learn, because I'm not just up there because I have to be. You know, I actually want them to learn the information because I think it is really interesting material, right? And so that's another reason why I enjoy teaching.
So what's your favorite class that you've taught so far, whether as a TA or a professor like you're doing now or otherwise?
All right. So favorite class I've had the opportunity to teach so far. So, you know, last spring, my last semester at UT, I had the opportunity to teach professional development in wildlife and fisheries. So it was mainly seniors in the Department of Forestry, Wildlife and Fisheries at the University of Tennessee. So everybody or every undergrad in that department has to take this at some point. So it's mainly seniors, you know, they're getting ready to graduate that May. And so they come into that class, and kind of what I taught them is, well, one, how do you find a job? Why, where do you go? What kind of resources do you look at to find a job? Then, you know, we also went into grad school. We went over cover letters. How do you make a great cover letter that'll help you potentially get the job? How do you make a outstanding resume? And so when it came to cover letters and resumes, I had them all submit a example cover letter and their actual resume to me. And I, you know, I edited that resume and cover letter for them to what I think would make it a very solid cover letter resume to try to help them. And I really think in that class, it allowed me the opportunity to try to help some of these students, you know, get the job that they want, or have the courage to even apply for specific jobs or a specific grad position. And, you know, I really appreciated that opportunity. And I guess the kind of relationships from a mentor's perspective that I was able to build with some of these undergraduate students, and many of them that did graduate last spring, I still talk to this day, and even help them, you know, look for jobs, or I'm a reference for them when they are applying for a job or a grad position. And I don't know, that really hit home to me that, you know, I'm actually helping out and making a difference in some of these students, you know, lives, but also potential future careers. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, we have a couple classes like that here at Arkansas Tech. And I got to say, from personal experience, they are super helpful. And you gain a lot of what I think is really crucial knowledge for our field.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't have one of those when I was an undergraduate, so I just had to, you know, fend for myself and just kind of rough it, I suppose.
Okay, so our usual co-host Jacob couldn't be here tonight, but he did have a question that he wanted me to ask you in his absence, and that is, what is your worst experience that you've had in the field?
Yeah, all right, so I'm not going to mention anybody's names, but during my time at the University of Arkansas Pine Bluff, during my master's, I was helping a grad student sample for fish, let's just say that, and we were on a specific lake. And this lake has a lot of, you know, flooded stumps, a lot of flooded timber. And, you know, to get from point A to point B where we were electrofishing, somebody had to be on the bow of the boat at each time. And we were transitioning from spots to make sure we didn't go over a stump and get high centered. Well, the individual was going a little too fast. And by the time I could say anything, we were already high centered. And we broke something on the boat where we could no longer start it. You know how the story goes. So, yeah. And this was, let's see, spring break, my first year there. So mid-March, you know, temps aren't quite that warm, still kind of cool. I was wearing a jacket and, you know, pants. So that tells you how cool it was. So we had to figure out what we were going to do. So since it was this grad student's project, they said, all right, I'm going to jump out. I'm going to go tie us off on a tree with a rope and we're going to pull ourselves off. So we finally got off and, well, we tried to fire the engine up. It wouldn't work. So we're like, well, what can we do? And so we parked at the main boat ramp on this lake, but that was complete other side of the lake. And that's where the truck and the trailer were, right? And so we realized that there's this old dirt boat ramp, you know, not far from where we were. So I was like, let's paddle the bank. You drop me off. There's some kind of trail up there. I can make it to get out to the main road. So I ended up getting out off the boat, walking up this little hill, getting on the trail, make it out to the main road. And, you know, just for, you know, fun, I typed in my phone, how long would it take me to walk there? It said 45 minutes. So I'm like, holy smokes. So, you know, I eventually get there. By this time, I've taken off my jacket and I'm wearing a t-shirt because I've warmed up due to walking that far. So I get in the truck and bring the trailer all the way around this dirt boat ramp. And by the time I'm getting there, the grad student and another individual that is helping are just now showing up. And so we get the boat loaded. Basically, we had to all get wet in order to get the boat up on the trailer. That was a real fun experience. And we were supposed to do another lake or sample another lake that day. We didn't. We ended up stopping, I think it was in Hampton, Arkansas, at some restaurant and getting, you know, a cheeseburger and fries to try to end the day on a good note. But that's my, you know, worst day or worst field experience day in fisheries.
I love that question because it seems like everyone always has one really interesting story, if not a couple. There's always a mechanical failure or miscommunication that's bound to happen eventually in this line of work. All right. Well, Kyler, now that the nitty gritty of the interview is over, we're down to our final five questions. And this is a group of five questions that I ask each of the guests that come on the show. And the first one we have here is real simple. What is your favorite fish?
You know, that's actually a tough one for me because I have a lot of fish that I just absolutely love. But, you know, my favorite fish, I'll have to go back to when I was doing my master's in the strawberry darter, mainly because I spent so much time with this species and got to see this species so much. I just really, really developed a passion for it. And to this day, I still claim it is my favorite. I have a actual picture of it as my background on my computer in my office. So that tells you how much it's my favorite. So
Yeah. I would probably have to agree with that to an extent. It's at least in my top five, just because like all of the orange throat darters and all those species are collectively included in that, just because of how gorgeous they are, especially the blue, because blue is my favorite color and you don't see blues that brilliant in freshwater very often, or at least around here. So it's pretty special to me.
Yeah.
All right. So the next question is, what is your favorite memory from your career so far? So pretty much the opposite of the worst experience question.
Yeah. So I actually tell this to every, you know, little intro class I have a chance to speak to. And every day during the first semester of the class, I do a who is your professor instructor type lecture so they can get to know who I am. And I always talk about this. So during my master's at the University of Arkansas Pine Bluff, my master's advisor, Steve Lockman, did a lot of work with the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. And at that point, Arkansas Game and Fish Commission was doing an alligator gar study on the lower Ouachita River below Felsenthal National Wildlife Refuge. And so Dr. Lockman asked another grad student, myself, if we would like to go down that week and help. And we were using various, you know, techniques to sample these alligator gar. I think it was like the last day that week. We were using, by this day, we were using an angling method where we put, you know, a certain bait on the end of a tungsten hook of a large size, of course, on a steel wiener, and it's attached to a buoy. And so when you see an alligator gar on that, you just see that buoy that's the size of a football, roughly, just bouncing up and down, sometimes go completely underwater. And so what individuals who were fishing for them would do, they'd have this huge deep sea fishing pole with, I don't remember what pound test line on, but they'd go up to the buoy and they'd attach it on a swivel and latch it. And then they set the hook and then, you know, the fight was on, right? And so one of the smallest guys that was with us that day hooked into a giant. I mean, they were fishing this gar for, it had to have been at least 30 minutes at this point. And, you know, not everybody was around that boat, but we were all kind of, you know, in the same vicinity. And I think we were working up another alligator gar at that point. And so once this person landed the fish, you just hear cheers on the boat. And so we knew it had to be a big one. And so they get the fish over there, and it's the biggest freshwater fish I've ever seen. So it was a 175-pound, 7.5-foot alligator gar. And I will remember that probably forever. Not probably. I will remember that forever. Just seeing a fish that's that massive. You know, you only hear stories of fish getting that big. You know, maybe pictures that were doctored or, you know, fish actually out in an ocean, they are capable of getting that big. But to see one in person, that was just amazing. Greatest field day of my life was seeing a fish that big.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think I've ever seen an alligator gar in the wild, or at least one that size. But every time I hear a story about someone's experience with a fish of that size, it always sounds like an absolutely magical experience.
Oh, it most certainly was. I have a video of me picking that individual up, individual fish up, and show it to people all the time. You know, I want to brag about the cool stuff I see. So I'll show people all the time, and they're just like mesmerized that, you know, I was able to see a fish that big, like, you know, in waters in Arkansas. So it's pretty neat when I get to show that video.
Yeah, that's awesome. So next question is, what is your dream job/location?
You know, I'm not going to lie, since I'm already back here in Arkansas and with the position I have, I absolutely enjoy it so far. And I would eventually love to retire here. One, because I'm in my home state. I get to help mostly Arkansas students, undergrads, you know, potentially learn about fishery science and hopefully see them go on and have successful careers in a wildlife or fisheries field. But then I also get the opportunity to do research in Arkansas and help preserve some of the fisheries resources within the state. So I would say currently dream job is where I'm at.
Living the dream. Awesome. So next question is, if money was not an issue, what is one project you would like to work on?
Oh, that's a tough question. So if money was not an issue and I didn't have to teach, I would probably go out and try to set a baseline for every SGC and species within the state, a baseline as far as, you know, abundances, distributions, and that way we have one. And we had that for every SGC species. So moving forward, we can now relate back to that and know where we need to, you know, concentrate our efforts conservation wise, but also be able to determine what species actually need more help than some others. If money was an issue, which I don't know if a project like that could ever be done, but it sounds good. It sounds good if money wasn't an issue. Anyway.
Okay, so we have one more question. If there was one principle that you could have programmed into everyone's head, what would it be?
Oh, that is a good one. Small fish or like darters are important also. That's what I would say, because thinking about, you know, a lot of the questions we have or a lot of the questions associated with these small fish are, you know, what purpose do they serve? And we know that every fish, every native fish anyway, does serve some purpose within the ecological environment or ecosystem of a particular water body. However, figuring out that question or trying to address some of those questions associated with the species is sometimes hard. But how I try to relate it to a lot of people I talk to when they ask, like, what does it do? Which is a general question I will get from, you know, the general public when speaking with them. And what I say, because it's probably more true than I think it is, but that they are a prey item for a lot of your sport fish. And they serve some purpose within the food web of that particular water body that helps, you know, your largemouth bass or your smallmouth bass eventually get the paradigms it needs to grow up and be a big one that you want to catch.
All right. Well, Kyler, thank you for coming on the podcast today. It was a pleasure hearing about you and all the work you've done.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
And if people want to find out more about you or get more information from you or get a hold of you, how would they do that?
Yeah, so they can email me at khecke@atu.edu, or they can at me on Twitter at fishhecke, so FISHECKE.
And as always, we'll put that in the show notes if anyone's interested. If you would like to get a hold of us, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at FisheriesPod, or good old-fashioned email, feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. Hope you enjoyed this episode. You can download past, present, and future episodes when they come out on your favorite listening app. You can also stream it on Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. And don't forget, you can help support the podcast with a monthly contribution through Patreon or by rocking some awesome Fisheries Podcast logo t-shirts, hoodies, and stickers available on Teespring. I'm Dawson Hicks, joined by my co-host Anthony Zanga, and thank you for listening to the 147th episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, small fish are important too.